With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. North Carolina-born David Payne is still in his 20s, but his first novel has won a Houghton Mifflin Literary Fellowship. It's called Confessions of a Taoist on Wall Street.
I initially conceived it as a farce. I thought the idea of a Taoist monk who came to Wall Street using the I Ching as a method for forecasting stocks had some interesting comic possibilities.
A pun is at the heart of the novel and its title.
The pun occurred sort of spontaneously. I happened to be reading Taoist literature at that time and also looking at the stock market, and suddenly one day, Tao and Tao. And the cosmic resonance of that pun, if I can put it that way, seemed to me very exciting.
It's also a quest novel with the hero searching for his long-lost father. Is David Payne a Taoist?
No, I'm not a Taoist in any formal sense, but Taoism really isn't a formal, systematic philosophy anyway.
Payne says there was a lot of interest in the Eastern philosophies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where he was a student.
I looked at a couple of different schools of Buddhism and Taoism, which is sort of a predecessor of Zen.
David Payne began work on his novel in 1980.
The last year or so of writing this book, I was virtually insolvent and living in an old house on the coast of the Outer Banks.
If the reviews for Confessions of a Taoist on Wall Street haven't been ecstatic, the novel is sometimes difficult, sometimes wordy, and yet shows much promise by a young man who vows to commit himself to writing.
I can't imagine anything more exciting or a profession that I would rather, commit myself to.
Novelist David Payne with BookBeat. I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Completing his 735-page first novel, 1,400 manuscript pages, was no easy feat for David Payne, author of Confessions of a Taoist on Wall Street. Writing the novel took Payne 4 years, with little in the way of income.
I did a stint as a cabinet maker. What I did most during that time was I worked as a commercial fisherman on scallop boats off of the Outer Banks.
Payne says going to sea seems to be obligatory for an American writer.
The money working on the commercial boats was actually quite good, and I was living close to subsistence level. I was living in my family's house, which is a large, ramshackle summer cottage, unheated, but I'd put a wood stove. And so it wasn't very expensive for me to live.
That was on the Carolina coast. Payne says that as his novel developed, it seemed to create its own energy.
It was sort of like setting up a system of dominoes with all sorts of arabesques and whirligigs and so on, and then pushing them and watching them start to tumble.
Payne describes himself as wired as he moved into the final phase of the book.
Occasionally, I would spend as long as 36 hours straight at the typewriter. The energy sort of swept me up, and I was at its mercy.
In fact, he says it took 6 months to come down after this manic period.
I would try to go to sleep at night, and I would find my mind dieseling like an engine, when you turn it off and it continues to shudder. Images, fragments of conversation would continue to spill out, and I'd have to get up and write them down.
Confessions of a Taoist on Wall Street traces the odyssey of a young man who leaves a remote Taoist monastery in China and goes to Wall Street, where he uses the Eastern philosophy to seek his fortune. David Payne's novel won a Houghton Mifflin Literary Fellowship. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. In the middle of November, NBC broadcast a two-part TV adaptation of Joe McGinnis' book, Fatal Vision, about Jeffrey McDonald, the Green Beret doctor convicted of murdering his wife and two children at Fort Bragg. The TV movie and the publicity over McDonald's unsuccessful legal effort to stop the broadcast helped to push the paperback version of Fatal Vision again to the top of the bestseller list. Joe McGinnis, who spoke to me in 1983, says the book was actually McDonald's idea.
He was the one who first suggested a book. He said, for years I've been trying to find somebody to write a book who will tell the whole story, the truth. I want the whole truth told.
Earlier, Jeffrey McDonald had asked Joseph Wambaugh if he would write the book, but was turned down. McDonald was charged with the murder shortly after the killings in 1970, but the charges were dropped. The case was reopened years later, and Joe McGinnis joined McDonald and the defense team for the trial in North Carolina.
It was a rare opportunity. I'd never read a book that had been written by anybody who had that kind of access to the defendants in a major murder trial.
After McDonald was convicted, Joe McGinnis had access to all of the doctor's papers.
He would make these cassettes, make tapes, which he wasn't actually supposed to do according to prison regulations, and he would smuggle them out of the prison.
McGinnis concludes in his detailed book about the crime that McDonald was indeed guilty.
He has a personality disorder which leads to repressed rage against the female sex.
McGinnis says McDonald's wife must have said something to trigger that night of butchery.
The only person who heard it, who's still alive, is Jeffrey McDonald, and he'll never tell.
Joe McGinnis, renewed interest about his book, Fatal Vision, returned it to the top of the list. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. The next time you reach for a paperback book, one of the men you can thank is Ian Ballantyne.
It was a time when people said in the U.S. that Europeans were the types that would read paperbound books, but Americans would never do that.
In the 1930s, there were only 500 bookstores in the entire United States.
There were no bookstores in the whole state of North and South Dakota.
The booksellers of the period hated the thought of paperbacks. They thought it would cut into their business. Penguin had been profitably publishing paperbacks in England, but Ballantyne says the U.S. copyright laws prevented the export of those books to the U.S.
Until recently, our country had a worse copyright law than the Russians. It had a manufacturing clause in it, which was designed to protect American printers.
Ian Ballantyne, just 22 years old, went to Penguin to say he knew a way to get the books into America.
The copyright is a formal record kept by the government in the event that there is a dispute. And if you ask them to take away their formal record, there's nothing they can do. They have to give it up. And if they don't have it there anymore, then customs would have no excuse for stopping the book.
Coincidentally, Pocketbooks also started publishing paperbacks in the U.S. the same time as Penguin, July 1939. The books went to drugstores, magazine shops, bus and train stations, and overnight changed American reading habits.
This meant using magazine wholesalers, who in some instances were also newspaper wholesalers. And some of them were rather rugged types.
Ian Ballantyne went on to found Bantam and Ballantyne Books and is still active and especially proud of such recent titles as The Secret of the Gnomes and Castles. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. Ian Ballantyne is one of the most innovative publishers in America. He was in the forefront of the paperback explosion in the late 1930s, bringing the Penguin books to the U.S. from England. During World War II, he was responsible for the first Armed Forces Edition paperback, John Steinbeck's The Moon is Down.
A library of 50 books went out to every unit. It was never again going to be the case that you could say that Americans didn't read paperbound books.
Ballantyne founded Bantam Books in 1945 and Ballantyne Books in 1952, both now part of the Random House empire.
I tell the Bantam people now that I'm the only founder you ever had.
Ian Ballantyne was among the first paperback publishers to print original titles, and he developed the concept of publishing a book in softcover and hardcover simultaneously. In the 1950s, Ballantyne published the best of the science fiction then being written. He likes the idea of cozying up to the authors who are thinking about what's going to happen next.
When Tolkien came with The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, that changed things forever. Fantasy had been considered to be juvenile. We now were able to establish that fantasy was adult.
Ian Ballantyne regrets some publishing decisions, such as the time he turned down Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
My 15-year-old son had just announced that he was leaving for Canada on his bicycle and he was going to support life with his 22 and his fishing rod. And I knew the book would sell, but I also knew there would be no way of explaining it to Richard if we published it and said he couldn't go to Canada.
Publisher Ian Ballantyne, the man behind two recent beautiful books, The Secret of the Gnomes and Castles. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain.